Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Pick a Side podcast. We are here live after a batch of game twos. The Timberwolves beat the Suns 105-93. The Pacers beat the Bucks 125-108. And the Mavericks beat the Clippers 96-93. Two of the three series are now tied at 1-1. Now heading to game three in the away team's respective home court. How you guys feeling?
I'll tell you what, we watched some okay basketball. I'll say this last game, it seems like that's been the trend. The last game of the night has been the best game of the day. A little bit of what I was expecting outside of the Pacers really dominating the Bucks. I'll say I anticipated a Minnesota win, and I didn't think that the Mavericks would go out easy. I will say once I saw Kawhi Leonard was ruled in, I was on the side that the Clippers would go up 2-0, but, man, Dallas looked awesome in that fourth quarter on all aspects, offense and defense. But I'll tell you what, it was a solid ball game to watch for sure.
It was good to see Kawhi, I think, as the game went on, got more comfortable. I thought early in the game, first quarter, just looked a little bit off. You know, he hasn't played in, I think it was 9 games in a row, including game one that he missed. So I feel like that second half, he looked a little bit more comfortable. He wasn't vintage playoff Kawhi by any means. I'm not sure how many minutes he finished with. I want to say around 30. I know they pulled him about 25 in the third quarter. So I'm sure as the series goes on, he'll get more comfortable. But I think if you're a Clippers fan, you're just happy he got out there even though he lost tonight.
I feel amazing.
They're Love saying that. That this little thing you got going on here with the durag, the glasses, and the blanket, one of the comments was like, you're zesty. I'm glad the comments came to your defense about it. But you're just comfortable, man.
No, what it is we all live in Jersey, and in Jersey it's damn near 1 in the morning, and we have jobs that we have to get up in the morning to do. So after these shows, I like to lay in bed and go to sleep. So I prepare myself.
If they're calling you zesty for Dewey, I mean,
I think it's the blanket, about the blanket issue with
the blanket. Honestly, I wish I had one right now. I would actually do anything for a blanket.
You know what it is,
right,
Drew?
Now.
My aura is just insane.
No, it's actually ridiculous how much aura you have. Correct.
I think whether you're straight or homosexual, I think everybody uses a blanket.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
I don't think you needed to say that, but yeah, definitely.
Yeah. What, you didn't think I needed to specify on it? That's what zesty essentially is, right? That's what zesty is.
Now, zesty doesn't mean you're completely homo.
No, but it means that you are doing something that requires...
Teetering
that
line.
Yes, you are teetering a line.
Here we go. Basketball.
if you're watching right now, you can subscribe to the channel. That helps the channel grow a lot. Please like this video. We're on here at 1 a.m. for you guys, and it's probably going to be uploaded at like 2-3 a.m. around there on YouTube because we go live on playback first. If you guys want to catch our live, link is in the description. Tomorrow night, Wednesday, we will not be going live because the NBA slate is not that good. You have the Heat, Celtics, and then the Pels and OKC. It's our time to get some rest time. Then Thursday, we'll be back on here live and talk about the playoff games and the NFL draft because that's going to be a huge moment as well. So talking about the first games, Suns and Timberwolves. The Timberwolves beat the Suns.
We might as well start with the one that just happened.
You want to start there, Riff?
Touching the mind, you know.
Lex, I appreciate you looking out for all the Mavericks fans that are watching.
Yeah, we can start there for sure.
The Mavericks beat the Clippers 96-93. Game one, just a bad game. You know, the effort on defense wasn't there. They shot in the 20s in terms of percentage on open three-point shots. And in game two, they just switched that around. I mean, Luka didn't have the best shooting night from the field. He was blitzed essentially the entire game. If the Clippers are going to blitz Luka, now every team's going to blitz Luka, these role players need to hit their shots. PJ Washington knocked down 4 threes. Before this game, he liked the tweet from Nick Young saying that, you know, laughing at people that picked the Mavericks in this series. So I knew PJ Washington was motivated. Drew, was he a needle mover tonight?
He cooked tonight.
Okay.
He cooked tonight.
You know, needle mover. I think he's a needle mover.
He moved your needle?
Yes, all the time. My needle's always up when it comes to PJ Washington.
Good Lord.
Maxi Kleber hit 2 threes. Kyrie Irving was phenomenal. But I think what won in this game outside of the role players stepping up is that their defense held the Clippers to 37% from the field and 27% from three. the Clippers were missing some open looks, but for the most part, the Mavericks played great defense top to bottom. And in the fourth quarter, they came away with more clutch buckets. Luka Doncic hit a dagger. Kleba hit a late dagger. I mean, this team was ready to play. In the end there, it was looking scary because Luka almost threw a pass that looked like it may have been a turnover. Kyrie Irving fouled Kawhi that Jason Kidd challenged, and it wasn't called the foul. So not the sweetest end to the fourth, but the Mavericks are going back to Dallas tied 1-1.
The one thing I'll say about that fourth quarter offense for the Clippers was it's more so, let me not talk about their offense. Let's talk about the Mavericks defense. And I feel like we have to start with Luka Doncic on that side. I feel like I heard you talking about it a little bit before we got started, Joel, and you're 100% right. They were looking to double, and Luka kind of said, hey, don't do that. Don't fuck up our defense because of me and my deficiencies that I've shown. There were no deficiencies from him on the defensive side in this fourth quarter, whether it was Kawhi, whether it was James Harden. He definitely held his own multiple times, making the offensive player be uncomfortable, mostly against Kawhi Leonard. I felt as if when he was guarding Kawhi Leonard, that's where I felt like Kawhi was either forcing shots or was forced out to pass the ball. Luka Doncic played some awesome defense tonight. And then down the stretch of this game, you saw the Mavericks hit big shot after big shot, whether it was Luka, whether it was Kyrie in the mid-range, whether it was PJ Washington. I mean, the guys stepped up. Maxi Kleba honestly hit one of the bigger threes where you see the Clippers making their run. I believe it was a three-point game at that point in time. And then Luka kicks out. Kleba clutches up, knocks down a huge shot. But got to give credit to the Mavericks tonight. On the defensive side in the fourth quarter, they definitely held their own. The Clippers definitely didn't shoot the ball the way that, obviously, that they shot in game one. Kawhi definitely looked like there was some rust to be shook off. But if you're the Mavericks stealing one on the Clippers' home court, that's enormous, especially after the way that you got worked in game one. But again, credit where credit is due. I give a lot of slack to Luka Doncic's defense. And there's nothing for me to say tonight, not even a little bit, in the biggest moments, on top of the offense that you're already anticipating, the defense, which is usually lackluster, he did his thing tonight for sure.
I definitely think in the fourth quarter, schematically, what Ty Lue was putting out there was also helping the Mavericks defense, you know, having lineups with Westbrook, with Zubac, that kind of leaves to where you can keep a guy on the right or on the left that's helping on the driving lanes with Paul George and Kawhi. And all Luka has to do is just stay front, stay close, you know, not get beat. The effort has to be there. So I definitely think that helped. My whole thing coming into this game was how the Dallas Mavericks were going to respond defensively. I never had an issue with their offense. The shots are going to eventually fall. Luka and Kyrie are going to beat Kyrie and Luka, but defensively, what are they going to look like? And you saw it. They were sending two at the ball at times. They were putting a lot more pressure. They wouldn't let anybody beat them. They were battling on the glass. They wasn't letting Zubac get down in the paint. They played great defense this game, and I think that was the turning point. And I think on the Clippers side, honestly, if you're a Clippers fan, this is Kawhi's first game back in about 3 weeks. He didn't do any contact before the game. This was his first contact in 3 weeks. I don't think he struggled with Luka at all. I just think he was trying to find a shot throughout the game just to get ready for the next game. I had no issue with him That's trying tough, to look for man. A shot. Like you're talking about a guy who hasn't played basketball in 3 weeks, did no contact prior to the game and was just getting warm-up shots. Of course, he's going to come into the game. You saw the first half, a little rusty. Second half kind of got it going late. But I do think you got to give credit to the Mavericks defense for the other guys like PG, Harden, Norman Powell, Westbrook. I think Ty Lue's got something in the bag waiting for games 3 and 4. But shout out to the Dallas Mavericks defense. But I think, honestly, in my opinion, looking at this Clippers game, if Kawhi just plays a little bit better, they win this game, and I expect him to play better. So I'm really not worried at all about the way this series is going. I feel comfortable 1-1 going into Dallas. As long as Kawhi is fully ready to go Friday, he's a little bit more healthy, I'm pretty good with the results.
Yeah, and it was, it wasn't just Kawhi Leonard who struggled. You have James Harden, who had the fantastic game one, only 6 for 14 in this game. Paul George, who was efficient, but only 14 shots. When you realize that Kawhi doesn't really have it going, I would like to see Paul George get a little bit more involved there. Like I mentioned, only 14 shots, tied for the second most on the team, just behind Kawhi Leonard and tied with James Harden. This was the first time all season long that the Dallas Mavericks scored less than 100 points and won a game. So the first time I think he scored less than 107 and won a game. It just goes to show we've seen this a lot in the playoffs so far through this first, you know, game twos or whatever, that it's been a lot of low scoring games. We could see the referees were swallowing their whistle a ton. I thought there was multiple calls that were left on the floor in this game. One specifically on Paul George late in the game, that there was a lot of contact and these refs just have been swallowing their whistle. And we were anticipating that for the playoffs, but it's good to see that they're staying at least consistent for the most part. I know there were some Suns fans who didn't feel that same way. Once we get to that game, we could talk there. But yeah, I mean, if you're a Dallas Mavericks fan, this is probably the dream scenario. You know, you go into LA, it's unrealistic to take two games, but you split the series 1-1, and the game you end up winning is the game with Kawhi. You know, I mentioned in this after game one that your mindset changes once you're the Dallas Mavericks and Kawhi Leonard is out. You know, you probably feel a bit better about yourself. You feel going into that game that they're missing their best player. On top of that, Dallas was one of the hottest teams to end the season. So you have kind of this built-in confidence that maybe you don't deserve because it's 0-0. Everyone's record is 0-0. And now they're missing their best player. And you could see, even though Kawhi's inserted, and we know Kawhi Leonard, any given series could be the best player in that series. Of course, the best player on the Clippers, even though he's inserted, the Dallas Mavericks defense looked even better. And of course, some of their shots started falling, specifically from PJ Washington. But overall, to, you know, split the series 1-1 in LA, going back to Dallas where that home crowd is going to be rocking. I believe they play on Friday. I think that's perfect case scenario.
There's a reason why this team, this Mavericks team, in the last 15 games of the season was number one in defensive rating. Post All-Star break was 11th in defensive rating. When they show effort, they are a great defensive team, and they give up shooting because of their defenders. Derrick Jones Jr. is an elite defender. PJ Washington, ever since he got to Dallas, has been a great defender. They don't shoot the best. What I like from DJJ is that he attacked closeouts. He wasn't settling for threes. He was attacking the basket. He had 10.7 rebounds. What he was doing is he's playing elite defense. He's driving the basketball, and he's rebounding the ball. If he doesn't feel comfortable in that shot, you know, he doesn't have to take it, because I feel like in game one, he settled a bit too much. PJ Washington, I feel like he's always been capable of shooting the ball great. He has these games where he shoots it very well and then goes back down to earth. I think he can shoot better. Daniel Gafford went out with an injury in this game. Derek Lively, these are the first two playoff games, and I think he's handled the physicality of the series pretty well. I don't think Luka's a bad defender, especially this year. He's been a very good defender. I just think it's gotten flown under the radar. He doesn't have to guard the best player on the opposing team. He just has to play great in a team environment. But Kyrie Irving's defense was also phenomenal tonight. And I understand what you're saying, Riv, about the Clippers not shooting well. The Mavericks shot historically bad in game one, especially in the first half. And in this game, Luka didn't shoot the ball very well, and neither did Kyrie Irving. You know, they hit Tom Lee baskets and played well when it mattered. There were only four Mavericks that hit a three-point shot. That was Luka, Kyrie, Gafford, and Maxi Kleba. Josh Green missed his attempts. Tim Hardaway Jr. went out with injury. This series is going to be decided with three-point variance, and the Mavericks have a very high ceiling because you know they're going to get a lot of three-point shots, open three-point shots, because Luka is going to draw doubles and blitzes. So the role players have to hit their shots. As for the Clippers, it's the same thing for them. Russell Westbrook, for as great as he is in spurts defensively, he was all over the floor tonight. He drove the basketball well. There will be moments where he gets a bad turnover. He's a little bit overzealous. He's left wide open from three, and you're daring him to take that shot. So it's really about these role players hitting their shots. And on both sides, I feel like there are exploits, and it's going to be about who can knock them down.
Yeah, I think it comes down to three-point variance definitely matters. I also think clutch time buckets are going to be huge. Dallas, at the end of the regular season, I believe had the most clutch wins, or number one in terms of win percentage in the clutch. Let me see. I have it here. Second or – okay, I lost it. Regardless, they were one of the best clutch teams in the NBA. The Clippers the Clippers were around 10th, I want to say. So they were still a really good clutch team. But when you have Luka and you have Kyrie and you see some of the daggers that Luka hit, some of the threes just in general in the fourth quarter, the one over Zubac where Zubac closes out really well. There's really no way that Luka could damn near even see the basket and he's able to get it in. There's times where you could just play perfect defense on a guy. But when you're that gifted offensively, those baskets can still go in. So three-point variance is going to play a big factor. But I just trust Dallas more in the clutch too, you know. I think it's unfair to probably point at this game because Kawhi wasn't 100%. And he'll be, of course, number one option when it comes down to those closing minutes. But Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving in the fourth quarter, 2 or 3 minutes left, that's probably one of the, outside of Jokic and Jamal Murray, that's one of the, you know, top duos I trust.
I don't have the exact wins, but in the clutch, the Mavericks are first in offensive rating. Their defensive rating is ninth, and their net rating is third in the clutch.
They had the... They were number two in win percentage in the clutch, just beyond the Lakers.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe that that's true watching this series versus the Nuggets. But just something calm, not even talking about the game too much. Luka Doncic's jump shot, it's pretty. The guy barely jumps off the ground, and that ball barely touches rim every time. Nah, that jump shot, he's really worked on it, and it's proven so far. Not just in the regular season, but so far and early on in the postseason too. But I'm anticipating a better offensive performance from the Clippers for sure. Harden shooting 2 for 10. I guess it is game one. Harden is a real thing. Game two, I mean, that it is what it is there. But I'm anticipating Paul George. No, I thought he played well too. Just 2 for 10 from three is tough. You got to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of driving, getting to the rack. I know that's not Harden's game anymore, but also Paul George, I want to see him be more assertive in the game. 14 shot attempts, especially when, you know, like Joel mentioned, efficient, but you need to be more asking for the, exactly, more aggressive, ask for the ball. Understand that you right now are the healthiest, most reliable offensive bucket getter for your team while Kawhi Leonard is still shaking off his rust. Well, Kawhi in his own right. Riv, I hear what you were saying that you didn't think that Luka played great defense on him and like just kind of Kawhi was shaking off rust. The two can coexist where I feel like, yes, the rust was there for Kawhi, but at the same time, I saw Luka Doncic standing right in front of him forcing Kawhi into bad shot decisions. But so I do anticipate that to get cleaned up.
I mean, those are the shots Kawhi takes. So I don't like it's like I don't know. Those
no,
are
that
like
those
shots
are
Kawhi
he,
takes.
Shots he takes, but they were highly contested. Like,
I mean,
he
yeah.
does
I
take
mean,
those mid range consistently. And yes, yeah. his efficiency
those
is
short
really
on a lot of the shots today. I felt like he was short on most of them.
For sure.
I just feel as if when you are bringing back a player like Kawhi into the lineup and game one, you have such a great game. Harden is a rhythm player and he loves to dominate the ball. And when you have Kawhi, those looks, I mean, you have to give the ball to Kawhi. He's going to demand the ball. So I think it kind of just got everybody out of their initial rhythm. And you have to hope that Kawhi just gets his legs under him because that's what it looked like. You know, his legs, he's just adjusting to coming back. And you don't know how long that could take. It could take a game. It could take two. It could take three. You don't know.
You got 3 days, baby.
The Harden jersey behind you is kind of crazy.
This is Houston Harden, by the way.
Okay,
I had it last.
Abs guy.
I had it last pod. You didn't say a thing.
Oh,
trust didn't notice
me.
It.
I saw it. Be honest. I saw it.
Yeah, it's just been there because the Luka Doncic one is hung up on the studio. You know, on our backdrop when we do the podcast in the studio. The Timberwolves beat the Suns 105-93. First half, some really positive signs from the Suns. I like how they adjusted to guarding Cat. KD started to front him. They weren't allowing easy touches to him and entry passes and then just drawing doubles and creating advantages early. They loaded up on Anthony Edwards when Cat got into early foul trouble. I'm going to say this about the officiating. I think the officiating is just too inconsistent when it comes to this series. The Timberwolves are a far more physical team than Phoenix, and because of that, and because they're much bigger, Phoenix gets away with a lot. Cat, to me, should have never been in foul trouble early. I don't think that he was really fouling. It was probably one where I thought it was, you know, legit, and I think the same thing happened in game one. With Phoenix and their offense, I thought it looked much more cohesive in the first half, where on these pick and rolls where Gobert would come up on the screen, they would run Spain pick and roll actions behind it, and it would kind of get them off guard a little bit, and they were getting pretty good shots. But in the second half, I feel like the Suns' ball movement was non-existent. They played completely different than in the first half. And in the second half, it was a lot of matchup hunting. But you cannot matchup hunt a team like Minnesota, who every defender that they have is a great defender. It's just not going to work. There's too many times where Bradley Beal, KD, Devin Booker, they're trying to go isolation on Rudy Gobert, and I just don't think that makes for good offense. The Grayson Allen injury that happened, of course, is going to bother their shooting, but ultimately, the Suns have to move the ball more. They can't play isolation basketball, and I thought that the number that dictated the game for the most part is that the Wolves had 31 points off of 20 Suns turnovers, and the Suns only had 2 points off of 14 Wolves turnovers. With the Suns heading into game three in Phoenix, you can't turn the ball over, and your transition defense has to be much better. I think they did a great job adjusting from game one to game two in rebounding. In game one, they were dominated on the glass. In game two, they won the rebounding battle. So those are some positive signs for them heading into game three. But the Timberwolves just completely out-physicaled them, and they just were making things happen off of turnovers. And Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards, bad shooter night. Cat, bad shooter night. Jaden McDaniels, 25 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists. Suns players are shooting 28.6% when he's guarding any Suns player. Jaden McDaniels so far, game one, he was taking over with his defense. And in game two, he was the best offensive player in those minutes without Ant and Cat. Conley, Jaden, and Gobert took the load, and they carried the offense, and they were phenomenal.
Speak on KD.
Oh, KD struggled. He wasn't good. Neither was Devin Booker.
Speak on Devin Booker.
No, he wasn't good. Listen, neither of the big three were good. In game one, it was great that KD at least was going. The biggest disappointment with this team right now is Devin Booker. Devin Booker has to take control. For as cocky as Devin Booker is as a player, if you watch JJ Redick's podcast, he makes some comments about how he's guarded different because he's one of those ones. So far in these playoffs, he's not looking like one of those ones. JJ Redick asked him about defenders that are great, and Devin Booker wasn't willing to give props to anybody, didn't want to give anybody any ammunition or praise before the playoffs. For him to stink it up in his first two games, and it's not just the efficiency, because I know game two is more efficient than game one. It's the Suns are not able to beat anybody on the Wolves off the dribble. That's why they need to move the ball. And that's why they're not going to beat the Wolves playing isolation. They have to change how they're playing offensive basketball. In the first half, they made strides to doing so, but they need to do it for an entirety of four quarters, and it's a concern right now. But Devin Booker, he's the first guy I'm looking at, and he needs to play better. He needs to play better. How he's playing is unacceptable.
Drew, hold on. Hold on, Drew. the Suns, man. It's like,
you're a fool.
It's just
you got the colors on.
No, it's I don't, but okay.
You do. You got a purple durag.
It's not the same purple at all. I have a red shirt.
Similar purple, low key.
Yeah. Anyways, the Suns, first of all, shout out to Minnesota. Their defense has been incredible just in terms of one-on-one coverage. Rudy in the back line defense. As a team defense, they've been great. You know, talking to each other in the pick and roll, communicating. Rudy and switches. I mean, Rudy has been their most important player so far in these two games, just on what he can provide on the defensive end, what he provides as a rebounder and switches. He's able to guard Beal, Booker, and Kevin Durant at times. It's truly what he's doing is like insane. Like I don't know how he can do it. And like he is showing you his defensive worth. And then with him in the back line, you can just see Ant being more aggressive, Jaden being more aggressive, Alexander Walker being more aggressive. And, you know, it's the playoffs, allowing them to be more aggressive, allowing them to take more chances. It's causing uncomfortability between those three guys. You know, I think these three guys, and Dell said this, I want to say a couple months ago, like they have the same game. Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, they all have kind of the same game. There's no real – they don't really complement each other, and there's no real point guard, no real guy that can slow the pace, that can create some havoc. Like, they're all not too athletic. They beat you off skill, footwork, a little bit of handles. But it's really tough to kind of move these type of defenders in Jaden. When you have Jaden, 6'11", long arms, just as fast as you. You know, quick IQ guarding Devin Booker. What is he going to do? I don't even know who's guarding Bradley Beal. I can't even remember off the top of my head, but whoever's doing it is locking him up. I believe it's Ant-Man. It's a combination of Ant-Man and Walker. Damn, sometimes even Conley. And then Kevin Durant. He, you know, first game he played well, but the second game didn't really play that good. I don't think they can stop the turnovers because I think Minnesota's defense is causing so much havoc that it's hard for Phoenix to settle down and really have a function. They don't have a legit offense. It's just a bunch of ISO, pick and roll, find the mismatch. There's no real offensive play calling in this system, and they don't have a point guard. So, you know, we thought on the opposite end, this is a bad matchup for Minnesota, but it's looking like so far this is an awful, awful matchup for Phoenix. I mean, they just can't get nothing going consistently on offense. And then defensively, I mean, Minnesota's offense hasn't looked great. You know, it's done it in spurts, but it's not the best. But the way they do it is like Joel mentioned, they get a lot of turnovers, they run in transition, they attack the boards, and at times they can hit threes at a high volume. You know, they have Mike Conley, you know, they have Nickel Alexander Walker, like they just have their role players playing well. And when you have Eric Gordon being the best player on your team for a game, that's just not ideal for a winning circumstance. I mean, Phoenix isn't getting any help from their other guys. There's really nobody else stepping up, and then your big three is just fumbling the bag. So, you know, going back to Phoenix, Kevin Durant talked about it's not over. I don't believe it's over. I think you have an opportunity to go home to win two. I just find it really hard for you to look for a formula unless you just start hitting at an insane rate like the Clippers did in game one, which I don't see Minnesota's defense like fully collapsing. I just really find it hard for this team to find the wiggle room to get a W.
For a game, I think it's possible. For a game, I can anticipate the big three going off and being able to snatch a win.
Play the big two, please.
Understand. And I don't disagree. Devin Booker, although, are we saying big two? Are we saying Beal and KD?
I don't think Beal's going to go off. I'll be honest.
Beal has been playing well, actually. It's been cool. Booker that's been lacking
he's
behind.
Out there, you know? Yeah.
But Joel, let me say this. You say that they need to change up the way that they play offense, that they need to start moving the ball. Correct me if I'm wrong. Have we not been saying this all season? Have we not been saying this legitimately all season about the Suns? And this isn't me coming at you. Not at all. Don't take it like that. All I'm saying is this is who the Phoenix Suns have been, and we've been asking them. You need a true playmaker. You've asked for TJ McConnell to come play the point guard for the Phoenix Suns all season. And you see LeBron, you see JJ giving flowers to TJ. Hey, at least you're on the right side of history. But understanding that this team does not have a true playmaking point guard. And although they've tried to transition Devin Booker into that, he simply is not. And Riv was foul on the last podcast talking about how there's 30 playmakers better than Devin Booker.
Change it to 40.
Shit, man, after this series, that conversation could be legitimate. All jokes aside, I look at this Phoenix Suns team, and I struggle to see how they can just out of nowhere, suddenly, now we're going back to Phoenix. We're going to play a completely different brand of basketball that we haven't played all season long, and that's going to be us moving the ball and really trying to find the open guy, when in reality, they have not done that all year. And they don't have anybody that can really slow down the offense and get that going. So I really do struggle to see how Phoenix has an answer for this Minnesota defense that has been number one all season long. And I would be damned if I did not give respect to Jaden McDaniels. After last time we were up here, I was talking about how his offensive game is lackluster. It's definitely been inconsistent, but there's nothing that I can say after today. Well, there's nothing I could say for today's game. He was nothing short of fantastic and one of the big reasons why Minnesota's celebrating a dub right now.
If you're a Phoenix Suns fan, first of all, I'm sorry, because it looks like your season's going to be cut short after making this Bradley Beal trade and paying the biggest, you know, tax of all time and all of this stuff that's going on trading for KD. But very similar to how last night between the Lakers and Nuggets, how if you're a Lakers fan, you kind of had everything go your way in terms of some of the Nuggets guys were off. Jamal Murray didn't play well for three quarters. You had some of your guys play well. You know, D'Lo hitting threes. Now, for the Phoenix Suns, it wasn't like they had a bunch of guys out there putting up 30. But on the opposite side from Minnesota, you have an Ant Edwards, at least shooting, did not play well. You know, after game one, he was talking all of that junk to Kevin Durant. There was memes going crazy on him on social media. In game two, he follows that up and was super inefficient. You have Karl-Anthony Towns, who struggles to shoot the ball. The best offensive players for Minnesota don't show up, right? Towns only takes seven shots. He's in foul trouble for majority of this game. Anthony Edwards, like I mentioned, goes 3-for-12. Even Naz Reid goes 1-for-5. So if you're a Phoenix Suns fan, I think you could talk yourself after game one, be like, listen, Ant Edwards went crazy, but if he just has a decent game and he doesn't, you know, drop that 30-plus on great efficiency, we have a chance. Well, you had that happen, and it's really only one quarter of Phoenix Suns basketball in this game too that you could look at as a positive, and that's that second quarter where they scored 30 points. They only had three turnovers in that second quarter. Outside of that, they get held to 21 points in the first, 20 points in the third, 22 points in the fourth. And that fourth quarter, I know it was only a 5-point difference, but it felt like a 15-point difference the way that felt like Minnesota really took control with their physicality. I think they said it from the get-go in the first quarter. They went on a quick like 8-0 run or something, and Phoenix eventually comes back. But throughout this entirety of the game, it just felt like Minnesota was always in control. Even it was like 51-50 at halftime, they always felt like the more physical team. And down the stretch, especially in that second half in the fourth quarter, it ended up being, you know, a double-digit win. They put in the bench warmers at the end of the game. I also have a difficult time thinking they're going to go back to Phoenix and tie the series up. When you have Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal, you always have a chance to win at least one game. But I think Rev made an excellent point. All I saw since this matchup was set was how terrible of a matchup this was for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I think the number one issue everyone had, and I even mentioned it too when we were doing our preview, was Rudy Gobert is not going to be the same rim protector in this series because the Phoenix Suns take so many mid-range jump shots and they don't attack the basket nearly as much as everyone else in the NBA. They're among the lowest in the league. But Rudy Gobert has been able to switch on the perimeter and do a fantastic job against some of the best pull-up shooters in the NBA. So he's changed his superpower from being an elite rim protector, which he still is, but now he's able to switch on to these guys and play elite defense. And kind of that knock on him, I think that's been on him from years, especially when you go back to Utah, it's kind of falling off now. Like, no, Rudy Gobert, if you try to put him in a pick and roll action, if you're trying to give him a switch on the perimeter, he's going to be able to hold his own. And if he's doing this against Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, you can only imagine what his confidence level is going to be feeling like throughout the rest of the series. So while this was a bad matchup for the Minnesota Timberwolves in terms of the firepower the Suns had, you can make the same argument for the Phoenix Suns. They have the length, they have the defenders. Every shot is going to be contested. It's very difficult to get clean looks at the basket or clean looks from the mid-range or three-point when you have Anthony Edwards on you, Nikhil Alexander-Walker on you, Jaden McDaniels on you, Rudy Gobert switching down the perimeter. I mean, their game is predicated on hitting these tough mid-range jumpers, and you have some of the best defenders in the NBA guarding you for 40-plus minutes tonight. I mean, the big three on the Suns all played 40-plus minutes in this game, and there was really no consistent offense outside of that second quarter. So I'm anticipating Phoenix to get one once they go back home to Phoenix, but I thought this was going to be a really competitive series, but I think Minnesota could get done in 5 or 6 games.
You know what's crazy? I did some sneaky stuff. Y'all ain't even peeping the tweet. Everybody name in caps except Book.
You know it's funny, bro.
Ant is not in all caps.
Not his first name. He has
the capital
letter.
A. He gets the capital A.
Just peep. You ain't even peep. I did that.
You mentioned about the lack of a point guard. I mean, they needed a point guard all season long. That's for evident. Sure. Yes. But the lack of passing has not been an issue all season long because in segments they have shown the willingness to move the ball around. For the entire of the season, they've ranked 20th in passes made. In the last 15 games, when Bradley Beal decided to play point guard and take that sacrifice upon himself, they ranked 7th in passes made per game. In this series thus far, I don't think Bradley Beal has done enough to try to generate offense for others. I feel like he's shot hunting a lot this series. There's too many moments where he is trying Rudy Gobert one-on-one. I think if you, maybe I could be miscounting, but just in my memory, in my head, I feel like Bradley Beal has taken Rudy Gobert one-on-one more than KD and Devin Booker have this entire series.
He's probably pressured the rim the most out of all three of them.
Yes, with your third guy having to be the one to sacrifice.
Bradley Beal, I want one of them to be pressuring the rim.
He's not looking to pass. He's just pressuring the
rim. That's fair. That's his role. I understand what you're saying, but I need Booker. I need KD putting pressure on the rim. If you're not going to do that,
Book can't get past half court.
He can't. Nah, they're boxed.
The thing with Kevin Durant and Dave Book, they haven't ever been elite pressure. No, you know, agreed. People that put pressure on the rim. And Kevin Durant's first step at this point is just not there. He can't get by people consistently that are faster than him. Bradley Beal was the one to sacrifice in the back half of the season, towards the end of the season. That's why the Suns started winning more games. And I feel like in the playoffs, his mentality has kind of shifted from being a passer to now he wants to score more. He wants to, you know, showcase himself. And I think it's because in a regular season, he's had some success against Minnesota as a scorer. But it's going to be him that's going to have to sacrifice and be more of a playmaker for the team. And at home, role players should play better. So you're probably hoping that you get some boost from them. But Devin Booker, he has to play like Devin Booker. I mean, KD and D-Book, they have to be averaging 28-plus every game. And together, not just one of them, both of them, for them to have a chance. For Minnesota, I mean, it's a bright side. You know, it's a bright spot that Anthony Edwards and Kat didn't get going shooting the ball, and they won this convincingly. They have went on runs in game one and third quarter, now in game two and the fourth quarter, where they have just upped their physicality and really made things uneasy for Phoenix. So this was definitely an encouraging win for Minnesota. And Jaden McDaniels, by the way, he has the talent to be this type of offensive player. I'm just going to put that out there.
It's just inconsistent.
He has plus handle for his size. He moves well for his size, and he's able to get to his spots in the mid range efficiently. Whether he makes it or not, that's a different story, but he is able to get to his spots, and with his role constantly fluctuating in Minnesota, there's not like a real avenue for him to just be like, okay, you're going to be the guy that's going to have to initiate this offense. But, you know, I think that he's fine and he has a talent too. It's just about putting it together and the confidence, really.
The thing you said about Beal was pretty important, because I think also what's been getting to him is the back and forth with him and Ant-Man. If you notice that, they've been going back and forth. The egos are starting to get to him. Ant-Man's talking his shit. Bradley Beal's trying to talk his shit back. So he's trying to get his on the end. And it's just the pecking order isn't the same. Like, Ant's the guy on his team. You're the third guy at times, sometimes the fourth. So it's not the same. You're not going to get – so the ego is definitely getting to him. Another thing is Grayson Allen possibly dealing with a little ankle injury, their best shooter, best spot-up shooter. So that's something huge. That's something big. That's one of their 5-6 best players. So for him to be hurt, him not being able to find his shot, that's pretty tough for them. Listen, if Phoenix pulls this out the mud, like you mentioned, Joel, it's going to take a Herculean performance from Mr. Kevin Durant and Mr. Devin Booker. God bless them, and I hope, you know, I want to see it happen. I really do. I'm genuinely cursed. You know, I want to see. This is the first time Devin Booker has played a healthy team in a while, so I would like to see him go out there and do his thing. So, you know, I'm excited.
Joel, did you take Devin Booker over Tatum to start the season?
Yes.
Okay.
That's how many points did Devin Booker score in game one?
I don't even 10.
It was ugly.
He scored 20.
And really?
My bad. Game two. Did you know that Tatum scored 19? Well, no. What did he score? 21 or 22?
His age.
He scored
against,
his age
against the Heat.
Something like that.
Did you know that Tatum was the only player in the negative in the Celtics plus minus in game one against the Heat?
It is truly the funniest screenshot.
Plus minus. When are we going to stop caring about that stuff?
Nah, Drew, if you see it, it's so funny. It's like,
oh, no, I saw. I saw.
Tatum's like the minus
only
three.
One, it's minus like, one, right? That's what he was, minus one.
It just never goes well for him.
I think the Celtics as a roster can sustain stinkers from Tatum. Still make the finals.
Like
Ant-Man today,
shooting nice stinkers, but you know, you're getting at the playmaking. I know you saw the playmaking.
Tatum had 10 assists in game one.
Tatum, yo, they forget about those game one. Assists. Tatum in the final.
Gotta watch that game.
They're inflated.
Let's get on to the real fake assist guy. Come on.
They're inflated. Fake assist.
Riv, remember when they were telling me that Pascal Siakam was a negative to this team? Remember? Yeah.
He's carrying.
Score above 10 challenge.
He's the best player on the fucking Pacers.
Riv, you remember when somebody said that Dame could surpass Steph after this season?
Who said that?
Second half Dame? I don't know. First half Dame and second half Dame are two different players. First half Dame could have done it.
The Pacers beat the Bucks 125-108. Pascal 37-11-6. Tyrese Halliburton 12-12. Double-double, baby. We here. That's Steve Nash's career averages.
This is what we're doing.
My
God.
So.
They won. Hey, Riv. Credit where credit is due.
Drew, it boggles my fucking mind that in October and November, these dudes NBA acting Tua. Like they acting like they seen Jesus. Like they acting like they seen somebody. And Dells was a part of it too. And that's what pissed me off. Because Dells, he's smarter than that. And the fact that he got caught in the
what
loop
I say, I
that it was,
I could
this
dude,
is, he's a superstar. He's doing this, that, and the third.
He was tweaking, like, Riv. He bro. Was tweaking.
And now we're looking at him.
We looking at
I
him.
I think crazy.
And he can't even get past 15 points. He's struggling.
Nobody put him above Steph. The conversation was who's playing better right now. Let's specify that. Who was playing better at the moment? It was Halliburton, bro. You can't even argue that. Halliburton, it was a 3-month stretch, by the way, where he looked stellar.
There's not even games in October for real. So don't count October.
It's like a week. Yeah, it is like a week.
So 2 months and then whatever. It was a pretty like it was like 30 games.
We get like a week. We get like Christmas. We get like a week off.
Well, listen, you know, Pascal Siakam, this is the series for him. They don't the Bucks don't as long as Giannis is not out there, they don't have an answer for Pascal Siakam. So this is the series for him. In game one, he played really well as well. In game one, Indiana shot poorly from three and they got a ton of open looks. And in game two, they shot 44% from three. That's probably going to go down, but the Bucks giving up open 3-point looks, that's just kind of what they do on defense. So the Pacers could make this a very competitive series if the role players are knocking shots down. And I'm kind of left wondering when Giannis is going to come back. It seems like the Pacers have figured out Dame in the second half. Rick Carlisle shrunk down his rotation this game.
God.
It's 8 real players playing in this series. TJ, OB, Ben Shepherd, Nembhard, Hadley, Turner, Nesmith, and Pascal. So Carlisle shrunk down his rotation quite a bit. That's how the Pacers got to win this game. You know, the Bucks are susceptible on defense. They got to hit their 3-point shots. As simple as that.
Man, I mean, the Pacers did handle business today, and that's huge, especially on Milwaukee's home court. But I'm with you, Joel. I'm looking for Giannis to get into this series because if I'm Milwaukee, I'm trying to handle business as quickly as possible. And with a win like tonight, you give the Pacers some hope. Now we go back to Indiana. Now we have a chance to really take a hold of this series. And listen, Dame played very well in this game, but at the same time, you don't have an answer for Pascal Siakam. The way that Indiana is just knocking down 3-pointers tonight, it's going to get to a point where now the Indiana Pacers, although this is their first test of playoff basketball, they're going to be playing with some – when you're young and you have this type of confidence, it continues to spiral into greater and better things. So if I'm Milwaukee, I'm looking for Giannis to come back so we can really shut the door on this series. Because after game one, I kind of felt like we all were consensus – yeah, this one could be over in 5, at most 6 games, and this is without Giannis Antetokounmpo. And when we came into this series, we were like, hey, without Giannis, this could be a hard-fought 7, but the way they, you know, you can't really judge a series off game one, but that's kind of what we did. We got caught in the moment because Indiana just didn't look up to it, and of course, Halliburton did struggle. And even though Halliburton wasn't the greatest player tonight, again, double-double, but Pascal Siakam can go out there, and he can ball the hell out. So I'm looking at the Indiana Pacers. And I'm wondering, I shouldn't doubt their offense because, again, they've been one of the most efficient offenses, not just this season, but, of course, when it comes down to basketball nowadays, one of the most efficient offenses in NBA history. But is it going to be sustainable? Are you going to continue this trend that you showed in game two as opposed to game one? And honestly, going into Indiana, I feel confident in their offense. I still worry about that defense.
Go ahead, Dels.
Is the whole Damian Lillard experience, is that the Pacers figuring him out in the second half? Or is that just an older player who has to take on this insane offensive load in the first half and be the entire offense in the second half is kind of just not as efficient because he's like 34 years old?
This game happened on NBA TV, brother. You're going to have to wait till tomorrow for my answer.
I'm fucking crying.
Because at least in the first game, it felt like it was more that Dame just didn't have the same type of energy. And this game also, to be fair, I mean, in the fourth quarter, it kind of became a blowout. Like it was a 20-point game halfway through the fourth quarter. Low-key, game one, too, kind of came a blowout on the Bucks side. But I think this is going to be a 6 or 7 game series. You know, not having Giannis, and the initial prognosis was 2 to 4 weeks. I think we're around that 2 week mark, I want to say, at least from his initial injury, which was around the second or third to last game of the regular season. But I don't think you could bring him back just yet for game three. I do think you see how that goes in Indiana. If you go down 2-1, then game four becomes a real question there. Cause if you go down 3-1, you're really fighting an uphill battle. And if you win and go up 2-1, you buy yourself a little more time. I still don't fully believe in this Pacers offense. Like, I know Drew mentioned that historic offense, one of the best offenses in NBA history. I still don't completely believe it just because Pascal Siakam's been great. Tyrese Halliburton, especially in this game, the first two games really has not been that great. I just don't know how long this run could last with Pascal Siakam just going in and dominating. You know, I think against Milwaukee Bucks, he's been able to show that he could dominate in this matchup, but in terms of like a actual sustained run from the Indiana Pacers, I don't know if they could keep up this level of offense like they showed today, scoring 125 points, Pascal back-to-back games. I believe, or unless Luka just passed in this past game, but he had the most points of any playoff player, game one and game two. He's just been playing absolutely incredible. But as Drew mentioned, the defense, I think, ultimately caps this team. But it was good to see some of the adjustments that Rick Carlisle made. I think, obviously, shrinking down the bench, not putting Doug McDermott out there, playing 8 guys instead of 10 or 11, whatever he had in game one, which everyone was asking for. So 1-1, we have ourselves a series. And Indiana going back home court, we saw the type of advantage that could have in the regular season. We saw the type of energy that building brought in the in-season tournament as well. So I'm excited to see what that arena is going to be looking like. But I'm expecting no Giannis again, and I'm expecting a win for the Pacers in game three.
I'm definitely
why'd you take the glasses off for him?
Because I'm about to hate. Like, I'm about to hate so hard. First of all, to talk about Milwaukee, I do want Giannis to come back pretty quick. You know, I think Dame, I think it's a mixture of Rick Carlisle making some cool adjustments, but Dame just kind of being lackadaisical in the second half. You know, I think if you have a type of heater like that, the veteran player, he is the guy that's been in the playoffs. I don't think a defense with little to no personnel should just be able to completely shut you down like that. But I also think the other guys aren't helping him out too much. I do like Indiana's offense, though. I like how fluid it is. I like the way they move the ball. I like how fast they get out in transition. You know, it helps all their players. Pascal Siakam has been their best player. He's been hooping, and like Joel mentioned, you know, Giannis is not playing right now. This is the time to eat up. Whoa, that was a little crazy.
But goodness, River Brown.
This is the time to kill. But if Giannis comes back, you know, that kind of puts Siakam in the box, which means another guy's going to have to step up. And that guy just – listen, I said this before. I'll say it again. The creation is a little muddy. The bag, the toolbox isn't there. The jumper is cool and all. I don't care about that hamstring injury no more. It's been 3 months. He hasn't been good. Hasn't looked good. The offense isn't there. Against this Bucks defense, you should be having a field day. And he has not lived that. He's made some good passes. He made some nice little cool, yo, you open to the left. I'm going to just throw it over here.
Making the right reads, right?
He's making the right reads. That's cool, I guess, for a point guard. But I do feel like when Giannis comes back, you know, all jokes aside, I do think Halley's going to have to step his game up to another level because I think that pairing, Siakam has been matching Dame, and I think that's been dope. But when Giannis comes back, you know, that's 35, 40, and 20. Like, that's a whole different beast that Indiana just doesn't have the personnel for. And if Mr. Assist.
Think we lost Riv here.
When you try to put the generational. Dope. There you go, Riv. Say that again.
Uh-huh.
Say after assists.
Oh, it just I need him to score more than 20 points. Like, show me that generational stuff you were showing me in the in-season tournament. You know, we've been waiting for that. It's been a long time.
They're actually talking about it in the chat. Honest question. Lonzo Ball or Tyrese Haliburton? Who would you rather?
Ooh, that's tough.
Don't be an idiot, bro.
I think the idiot part would be taking Hallie.
Listen, you get elite defense.
I'll take Hallie. That's too far. That's too far.
A healthy Lonzo.
I don't even know what that means anymore.
RIP, man.
The thing Damn, is, I'm with looking, with
Pascal was a starter worst plus six. Damn, everyone else was better.
The thing with Haliburton is that, I don't think he's not the most shifty player. Like, that's not his game.
Joel, we're down with plus minus.
I guess. I don't know.
It's a stupid stat. It really is stupid.
He's not as shifty as someone like Darius Garland. Darius Garland is more shiftier than him. The advantage that Tyrese Haliburton has is his shooting ability. That's what the advantage he has is.
Oh my God.
No, I don't think so.
I believe so.
If you looked at his assist today, he was playmaking. He was creating.
Have you ever looked at TJ McConnell when he's out?
TJ McConnell plays well, but he's not Tyrese.
No, I'm just saying, the offense is grooving.
When he suffered his hamstring, his left hamstring strain in January, that's when his 3-point shooting started to go down. Post All-Star break, he's shooting 30% from three. Before the All-Star break, he's at 40%. That 10% difference is a pretty drastic difference. And just based on what Haliburton has shown me throughout his career, he's a 40% 3-point shooter. That's what he is. And he's gonna take like 9 threes a game. That's his game. But if he doesn't have his legs under him fully and he's not making them at the clip he was making them before, the scoring is going to drop, even with the lack of drives and creation that I think he actually improved that a lot since he's gotten to Indiana.
It's tough, man.
I'm glad somebody put those stats in. Listen,
those stats, even the stats you want to laugh at, 17, 10, and 4 after the All-Star break, those are Darius Garland season averages.
No, Darius Garland season averages are 21-9, but it's not about him. It's not about him. It's about the fact that you were calling him a superstar, and now you want to give him passes.
I don't know how much
Garland averaged 18-6.
This year, yes.
Bro just pulled out 21-9.
That was two seasons. Yeah, last season.
Last year and the year before that. Yeah.
Okay. Keep up with the game, dude. Yeah. My goodness.
Yeah, of course. Why would I not? Yeah, brother, that hit him average third anywhere.
Now, I'll be honest. I don't know how much longer we can hold on to it, man.
We got to let it go.
When he's healthy. He's
for the USA team. Clearly, he's okay enough to do that. That is this summer, bro.
Bro,
what are we doing?
When you have a hamstring injury, you don't get surgery for it. It's not like you get surgery for it.
No, I understand.
You get rest for it.
He had off.
He didn't have that much off though. He came back because of the 65 game rule, because obviously you're incentivized to play those games to get a huge amount of money on your contract or your next contract.
Didn't he just get paid?
Yeah, but that's for the next deal. You have to make an all NBA team, and you have to
do it every season.
I don't think so.
It's not every season.
You have to do it at least one of the seasons. But with Haliburton,
the previous two.
After the season ends, because Indiana, they're either going to get eliminated now or next round, right?
Yeah.
He's going to have 2 months off before Team USA. So he's going to have time to get his hamstring back. Right now, he's in the midst of the season and he's still playing. So it's not like a hamstring is something you get surgery for and you come back. He's going to rest before Team USA.
Here's the thing with Hallie. Unfortunately, this is not a just 1 year thing. He's been injured for a good amount of time on back to back seasons. This is starting to become a trend with him where he's getting injured, you know, and it's affecting his play. And unfortunately, it's affecting his play where now he came back a little too early. He wanted to get his money. I'm all for going to get your bag. You know, you want to go make your money. I understand that. But now it's affecting your play in terms of now, you know, you're into the playoffs. You're trying to play with it. I don't know. He looks fine to me in the sense of he's running up and down the court. He's still very active. he's still getting that jump rope. He just isn't like, I feel like genuinely, he just doesn't have enough moves in his box to create other shots. Like once you figure out the 3-point shooting, he can't really do anything else. That's just how I feel. It's been
that's huge though. If he's not shooting as efficiently from three as he was before, that's huge. I mean, that's at least like if you're hitting two of those threes, that's like a 6-point per game jump you're making in hitting your threes. So I think that, you know, I want him to shoot better, and I think he should be more aggressive. I think he should be.
He shot 3-for-7 from three, but, you know, 4-for-10 from the field. He's just not getting his attempts up.
But, you know, I think when Giannis comes back, that's the real moment where I'm like, okay, now the pressure's on you because Pascal is going to have somebody that's able to guard him. But at least for game two, he had 12-and-12. You see that Pascal is playing really well. You're going to keep going to Pascal. So
do y'all know if the 2 to 4 week time frame from Giannis was from the day of his injury or from when Shams announced that like 5 days ago, 4 days ago?
I think it was the day of his injury.
Okay.
I think.
Yes. That means there's a chance Giannis comes back this series. I know he was doubtful for this game.
They said he could be back by game three or game four.
Okay. So it's been 15 days according to the People's Mix, 2 weeks.
What was the injury again?
Calf.
Yeah.
Predictions for tomorrow's game. OKC versus Pels, Heat versus Celtics. What do we got?
OKC in the Heat.
I think we see OKC play their best brand of basketball. I still think the Pels can play well, but I think OKC should win that game, and we'll see them play better than they did game one. And you said Heat? You're taking the Heat?
Trolling.
Yeah.
I pray to God Boston fumbles, though.
Okay, same Boston. You saw game one, brother. Come on.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. But I'm definitely praying on it for sure. Okay, see, though, I hope SGA figures out that little defense they got because he was in the box a little bit. So I hope game two he comes out and he puts on a performance because we need 30-point games.
Last thing, and then we can go. For the Pelicans, do you think they trade B.I. and they have Herb Jones and Trey Murphy as their starting wings?
That'd be dope.
Who are they trading B.I. for?
That's the question.
Point guard.
Point guard for sure. It'd have to be a point guard.
I mean,
guard.
CJ has to go too. It's time.
I'm not against that.
Wait, so that means you're starting Trey Murphy as shooting guard, essentially.
Or the three. You can put Herb at the two.
But then with Zion, he comes back.
Yeah, Zion plays the four.
I know, so you're going to have to put one of those two at the two
Trey
or three.
Trey at the two is not the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't think that's bad. He's just got to up his handles.
But I'm saying is, unless you're moving on from CJ, it still doesn't solve the point guard problem.
No, that's if you trade BI, it needs to be for a point guard. You get a point guard next to Trey, Herb, Zion, or a center. You trade it for a legitimate rim protector or someone that can actually stretch.
Oh boy,
he definitely needs someone who can shoot.
Because those are the two holes. That's really the two holes for the Pelicans right now. They're still playing great brands of basketball without it.
So with Giannis, Doc Rivers told reporters that he's been able to do some light shooting and get out on the floor for walkthroughs, but hasn't been able to do anything live yet. And he still has no timetable for when he's going to return.
I'm assuming that game today, is on Saturday?
That was today.
That game three is on Saturday?
Game three is on Friday.
Friday?
Yeah.
Friday. Hey, is that the 5:30 game? It's pretty disrespectful.
No, it's not. We're good.
Ah, man. Last thing I want to say before we go. This was on the Timberwolves and Suns series. I forgot to say it then. We are getting two things that I think are pretty important with the Timberwolves and Suns series. Number one, the Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels clip in reference to Kevin Durant. And Anthony Edwards says, we have Jaden McDaniels. As of right now, it's looking really good. Number two, Rudy Gobert and the slack that he's caught for years about his defense. He was just voted the most overrated player by the Athletic's anonymous player poll. He's having a heck of a series, and we are now seeing Rudy Gobert for the first time when he's surrounded with good defensive perimeter talent and how that can maximize Gobert. And it's starting to make him look much better in regards to it wasn't his fault for those Utah Jazz collapses defensively in the playoffs.
He's been amazing. Nothing short of amazing.
And DPOY. You saw what AD said, Drew?
Oh, yeah. I'm done with him right now.
You guys play tomorrow?
We play Thursday, thank God. I get another day of rest.
Sweet.
Wow, that's crazy. Luka Doncic has 30 point playoff games than 98.6% of all players in NBA history.
I believe
he's played 30 playoff games.
What a great tweet, actually.
I'll be honest. How many, what percentage of players have never had a 30 point game? Like 95?
That number has to be really high.
Like, it has to be crazy high. Yeah.
Drew said Luka played really well tonight.
Bro hated that tweet. He hated it.
He played really well.
That's been him every game this season, baby.
Cook.
Doncic.
I'll be honest. Right. Dallas is your saving grace.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Minnesota's done now because he picked the Suns.
Are we giving him that? I don't think so.
I don't know.
Phoenix, I mean, you can give me that if you want. You
Santos,
don't have to,
what do you say?
Me. It doesn't matter.
Don't give him that.
Santos spoke.
It doesn't matter.
Howie's in the mud.
Santos knows that when he's asked me to get a jersey for me, I've always told him Anthony Edwards. That's the one guy.
You should have picked Minnesota.
I thought it shocked all of us that you went with Phoenix. It really did.
You went with the Rams over the Lions.
And that didn't shock anyone.
It didn't.
Yeah, but the Lions were your team all year, and you went with the Rams.
But for the weeks coming up into that game, I did not feel great about the Lions.
So you lost your Lions card then?
I did.
So coming into this season, the Lions aren't one of your teams?
No, I'm in.
Oh, no, he's Joel, Bears guy honest, too.
I thought like going in, that was the one series I had no doubt in my mind you were picking Minnesota. I really thought
too.
You were gonna ride the wave and say fuck it, we're here.
No, I was pretty torn on who I wanted to pick. It was a hard decision for me to make.
What did Jess do to you, man?
Yeah, you let Jess.
What did Jess do to you?
It's not Jess.
Jess said Devin Booker's the most overrated player in the league.
Yeah,
she said he's not that guy. She's not that guy.
She does not fuck with Devin Booker right now.
She's not she's not a delusional Suns fan. She really hasn't been high on the Suns all year long, but in the regular season, it looked like the Suns, it would be a better matchup. We'll see what happens game three.
They kicked the ass in the regular season.
Yeah, we'll see what happens game three. That's why I felt good about it. But hey,
call like an IG model picks.
I'm not gonna be upset if the Wolves win.
No, yeah, you definitely shouldn't be.
I'm not gonna be upset if Anthony Edwards gets out the first round, because listen, it's either Edwards advances or he gets out in the first round. That's something I gotta hear for a year. So it don't matter.
You don't have to hit his KD slander, though. This going to come back. This always.
It doesn't matter, though. I feel like with KD, he's already made. I feel like, you know, at this point, it's like whatever. But if KD leaves Phoenix, you know, a team that should come calling, the New York Knicks.
He's leaving.
He's going to have another stop?
Wow.
Listen.
Another trade demand.
Listen, Kevin Durant will have one more stop before his career ends. That will be the stop that makes or breaks his reputation when he retires.
Coming
to LA. Don't worry, guys.
Because it's going to be the Knicks with them role players? Oh, come on.
I wouldn't even be mad if he went to New York, honestly.
He should have did it in 2019, but he allowed us to build.
I wouldn't want to go to New York if I was
came back on the back around. You know what I'm saying?
If you go to New York, have Jalen Brunson and not make the finals, that would suck.
Jalen Brunson's been stinking it the hell up.
Joel, they're going to take you guys to 6, maybe 7 games with Jalen Brunson as their one.
Show if Jalen plays like that, no, they don't.
No, agreed.
That's
agreed.
4 games. I'm not even trolling.
Brunson's going to play better, though.
I hope so. Because if he plays like this, Boston is beating them in 4 games.
Let him cook
games.
2 games. That's it. It's 2 games.
Boston has a better defense than Philly. I'm scared.
No, understandable.
Yeah,
wasn't
up.
Expecting this, Brunson. I was expecting Brunson that we've seen for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But that's going to do it for game 2 recaps. Next time we'll be live. We'll be on Thursday night on Playback. Make sure to hit that link in the description to subscribe to the Playback. It's very easy to create an account. It's going to take like 15 seconds max, but this will be on YouTube as well. So make sure you guys subscribe and like the video. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you guys next time.